Hello and welcome to The Epic Echo, a podcast created to reflect the voices of our community. This podcast is brought to you by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in West Virginia, and I'm your host, Nora Frazier. Welcome back to another episode of The Epic Echo. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and a very busy month for us here at Epic. We try to do as much outreach as possible during April in our communities to help raise awareness for the survivors we serve. Last week, we brought you an episode on sexual assault nurse examiners. We talked about what their work looks like and how they work together with advocates and other community allies to provide trauma-informed care for survivors. And it only seems right to offer the advocate's perspective to you this week as a follow-up. Joining me this week is Sierra Santa Maria, our Berkeley County sexual assault advocate. And I'll give her a moment here to introduce herself.
Yeah, hello everyone. So my name is Sierra Santa Maria. I am the sexual advocate here at EPIC, the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center. We serve Jefferson County, Morgan County, and Berkeley County. So I work in Berkeley County, and my role is to provide advocacy to survivors of sexual violence, stalking, and human trafficking.
And you do a great job at that, if I might add. So I want to go ahead and have you start out by just explaining what an advocate does, if you would. I know not everybody is familiar with the concept. So just like, if you want to take us through a typical day or just kind of your main duties, just kind of give us a little picture of what it looks like.
Yeah, so each day it's different. I can never expect the same routines every day. Some days are very crisis focus, and some days are pretty laid back where it's kind of appointments throughout the day. But an advocate is, you know, someone who helps ensure the survivor's voice is being heard, essentially. So their purpose is to empower, comfort, and connect you with support, information, and resources. Some of the ways by doing that are informing the survivor of their victim's rights, addressing safety concerns, and providing them with immediate basic needs, you know, such as food, safe housing, clothing. They can help create a safety plan, you know, for example, filing a protection order or other legal advocacy. And we can also offer referrals to other service providers. So there's many services, you know, that an advocate does, because overall our main goal is just to ensure all needs of the survivor are being met.
And for folks that don't know, we at EPIC have dozens of advocates that are all working in different arenas, all with very full caseloads, from domestic violence to sexual assault to the ones that are in our shelter with those folks who are there day to day. So we kind of are covering lots of bases with advocates that have their hands in so many pots. They're all over the place and they do such great work for the survivors in our community. So now that we kind of know what your role is, what is your relationship between a survivor and an advocate typically like? What can that look like? And it's probably going to vary the same as your daily routine, but if you could, again, just give us a general picture.
Yeah. And, you know, just like you said, not every relationship is going to be the same, because every survivor's healing journey is going to be different. The healing journey is unique and ongoing process. So the continued care and support will look different for every person. But typically, you know, an advocate is the first person in some cases that are truly there to listen and create a safe place where the survivor feels heard and validated. So trust to me is very important in this relationship for we, the advocate, to provide. You're there during, you know, such a traumatic and personal experience, and you want to support them through the aftermath of that, regardless of if the abuse happened an hour ago or 20 years ago. So this relationship becomes very significant to the survivor's healing process. Advocates essentially help bring a sense of control back to the survivor.
Yeah, and control is definitely one of the things that they need the most from us in those situations, because a lot of the times they might not have ever felt that they've had control, or they especially don't have control in their certain state. So you said that trust is really important for any, you know, family members or friends or even other advocates out there. Can you tell us a little bit of the ways that you use to establish trust with your survivors that you serve?
Yeah, mainly just giving them that space. You know, like you said, there's probably never been a point where they're able to feel heard, or in some cases, if they have told their story to family members or people in the community or friends that may not understand trauma-informed the way us advocates do, self-blame can be put on them. Even if it's not, you know, purposely put on them by their friend or family member. It can be done. I've seen it many times, and it just creates a space where they're not comfortable to tell their story, you know, if that was their experience the first time. So just really giving them that space to tell their story and listen to them and let them know that we believe them, and let them know, you know, that we are here to support them, just to create that trust and let them know that our services are confidential. You know, we're really strict with confidentiality here.
Yeah, and I just wanted to have you share that because, I mean, our advocates go through extensive hours of training to be trauma-informed and to be able to handle these really high-stakes situations, but I don't want folks to overlook the fact that just being a listening ear and just establishing a little bit of that trust can go a long way with our survivors as well.
Yeah.
So now, can you try to summarize for us, and this is something that I don't think that a lot of folks really have a good grasp on, knowing just how wide an array of emotions that these survivors are going through, but can you briefly just try to summarize for us the range of emotions that they can experience throughout the process of coping after an assault?
Yeah, there are so many ranges of emotions that one can experience. And, you know, not every survivor is going to experience the same thing. So that's very important to note, because a lot of the times I see the clients I work with comparing their healing process to others. And it's important to know that not every story and healing process is going to be the same, but some common emotions are shock and disbelief. So what I mean by that is that after the assault, the survivor can be in a state of shock. They will act like nothing has happened and can even find themselves in a daze, or in some cases they may not even realize they have been sexually assaulted until later on. And that's completely normal to have those feelings and emotions and to kind of realize that you have been sexually assaulted, even if it's years later. Other ranges of emotions can be experiencing flashbacks, having difficulty in relationships due to insecurities or trust issues. I have even seen where some survivors have even shown concern for the perpetrator, depending on that connection between them. So if the perpetrator was a family member, that's a big one. There are moments of anger and fear, depression, suicidal thoughts and loneliness, detachment. You know, this is a very serious crime with the impacts that it has afterwards. I think one of the most ones I see is the self-blame and shame. It's very common for the survivor to believe that what happened to them was their fault, or they could have done something to prevent it. And I always tell each survivor that no matter what, it was never their fault. And their reaction, whether it was to fight or flight, or in most cases freeze, which that one's not most commonly talked about, but their brain took control and reacted in a way that was set to protect them. And they truly had no control over that in that moment. You know, their survival instincts kicked in and did what it needed to do in order for them to survive. So for every survivor that's listening to this podcast, it's important to know that all these emotions and others that they're experiencing are valid and, you know, and are normal to go through.
Yeah. And for any folks, like you said, any survivors that are listening, I mean, it's clear that you not only know that all of these emotions are normal, but I'm sure that you've probably also seen all of these emotions. Like, I don't think that there's anything that a survivor could walk through your door with that you haven't already seen yet. So I just think that that should be comforting as well, to know that whatever, I mean, I know that it can feel really isolating and it can feel like no one's, you know, ever seen something like what your emotions are like right now. Or if you're really, really angry, you might be like, I don't want to go see an advocate. They're going to think I'm angry at them. But we know that those emotions aren't in your control.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. And even a big one that I see that a lot of people don't, you know, and going back to that trust I talked about, once they have that trust with me and they do see that I'm not judgmental or placing any blame on them, they start to open up a little more. In a lot of cases, there's that those suicidal thoughts, and there's a very huge stigma around that where people do not feel comfortable opening up about that. So that's a big one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that we kind of know what their minds are going through and kind of what their bodies are going through, you've talked about fight or flight and those ranges of emotions. How are their lives outside of themselves impacted typically? You know, I mean, does it impact their lives? How does it impact their lives for the folks that might not know?
Yeah, absolutely. It is very impactful. It's very traumatic, and having a support from an advocate can make a huge difference, because sexual violence can cause lifelong trauma, both physically and mentally. So having an advocate help provide that emotional support and healthy coping skills and connecting a survivor with counseling is very important, because being listened to and heard during this time, it does matter. And we as advocates are there every step of the way, so the survivor is never alone or left confused on what is going to happen next. For example, some questions we can help answer are, how can they get a protective order? Where can they go to stay safe? What to expect during a SANE exam or rape kit, to speak on most common terms. And, you know, let's be honest, the criminal justice system, it's not set up for victims. It truly isn't. So having that extra means of support can be really beneficial for the advocate.
Yeah, and one of the ways, I do a lot of trainings in the community, and specifically training with, you know, college age students. And I think one of the ways that folks overlook the way that survivors' lives are impacted is when it comes to school and when it comes to work. You know, you might just think, how is that going to impact you unless it happened in those places? But when you're going through this such intense trauma that comes up into your life really, really quickly, it can be difficult to focus. It can be difficult to still prioritize the things that you need to get done. It's incredibly traumatizing. We see them go through PTSD often. I mean, it's just incredibly difficult to get normal things done, let alone to get huge projects done, you know, like such as work or school and things like that.
Yeah, especially if they have triggers that are, you know, physical characteristics that they may see out in workplaces or school or out in the communities, it makes them want to not go out. And that goes back to that detachment and that isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. And being that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I know, especially in younger folks, there's a lot of confusion about raising awareness for sexual violence. People kind of, that sounds like something that shouldn't really go hand in hand to some folks, and it can be a little bit confusing. So I was wondering if you would tell us a little bit about how raising awareness for sexual violence actually does help survivors.
Yeah, I'm very big when it comes to spreading awareness and doing outreach events in the community, because raising awareness for sexual violence can help survivors feel supported by their communities. It can help them feel safe and included in that they do have support and they're not alone. Because chances are, you know, someone who has been sexually violated, even if they haven't told you. So survivors are listening to how our communities talk about this issue. They're hearing how you're speaking on this topic. So spreading more awareness and creating more safe places is how we can begin to truly make a change.
Yeah, and if you ever wonder why you're seeing an Epic table set up, say, at the county fair or at the farmer's market, I know a lot of folks are like, what are you guys doing here? This isn't where I typically see you. But there are survivors in those places, and we try to be there wherever they are in the community to let them know that we're here and that we have services for them. So I like to add that in, because it can be really jarring for some folks. They're out on a Sunday getting their basket of strawberries or whatever from the farmer's market, and they kind of venture over and they're like, what are you doing here?
I've had that happen to me on many outreach events, but in the same time, you know, there are the people that are confused on why we're there, but that same day we've had people come up and request services because they are survivors. So it's important to have those tables set up.
Exactly. And now we're going to kind of get into a little bit of the more difficult part of the interview. I want to ask you, what is the most difficult part of your work? I mean, I know that your work overall is really difficult, but if you could narrow it down just to help folks get an understanding of what you do go through as an advocate, just what is the most difficult part for you as an individual?
Yeah, so in my opinion, for me, I think the most difficult is just seeing so many survivors get let down by the systems that are supposed to defend them. I see firsthand how sexual violence is not taken seriously, and how long the reporting process takes. You know, a lot of people are not aware that there's only one lab in the whole state that tests rape kits. So what this means is that the survivors could be waiting up to a year or longer, you know, before the results come back and before there can be any movement on their case. So this prolongs their healing process. And this is just one major issue, but there's so much more improvement that needs to be done to ensure victims and survivors are getting the justice they deserve. So I think that that's definitely the most difficult, is just seeing them get let down and feeling like they went through that whole process for nothing, especially if at the end their case, there's not enough evidence and it doesn't move forward. That can be really heartbreaking to see.
And on the flip side, what would you say is the most important part of the work that you as an advocate or advocates in general do? What would you say is most important to the survivors that you've seen?
Just supporting them. And I know that's a very simple answer, but oftentimes a survivor truly has no one in their support system but their advocate. So just being there and listening and believing in them, it's so important. It can truly be life-changing for them.
Yeah, and again, I want to reiterate, although our advocates are amazing and they do a job that nobody else could do, that support system is something that anyone can help a survivor establish. And like you said earlier in the interview, you know someone who has been a survivor of sexual violence, whether they've opened up to you about it or not. So just think about the ways that you're talking about. I mean, we see things going on in the media all the time, yes. Very public and open trials that bring up a lot of emotions, and they're very triggering for survivors. So just be conscious of where you're bringing that up in conversation, and just be aware of the people that are around you, because they might be keeping something from you that could be very, very upsetting for them if you're just kind of, you know, throwing out victim blaming language, or you just have to be aware of your surroundings, and you have to be a little bit more tender and careful when it comes to talking about this type of stuff. I think people overlook it because they might think, I don't know anyone who's ever been victimized, so I don't really have to think about that. But you're in spaces where survivors also go, so you just kind of need to be cautious.
Yeah, and the second on that, you know, even when I'm out just doing things in my personal time, you know, if I'm out at the bars or out somewhere just in friendly environments, and I hear people make slight conversations jokingly about how, you know, men can't be victims, or you know, men are always the perpetrators, and that's not always the case. And you're having people around you that can hear that, because there are men who can be survivors and there are females who can be the perpetrators. So spreading more awareness on that is important.
Yeah, one of the most common things that I get, I do a lot of outreach and tabling at the university here in Jefferson County, and I have a lot of students who are uncomfortable with the material that I'm bringing them. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have for anybody, let alone when you're just walking to class and my table is set up in your way. But I have a lot of people who just come up with their friends and they'll be like, haha, you need that one. Remember that guy the other night? And they say it typically about my stalking pamphlets, you know, they'll see those and they'll be like, oh, we know that guy, he's pretty creepy. But I always kind of am like, oh, let's be careful when we're at the table. Let's just use cautious language. Let's just be a little bit kinder, because they are not thinking in that instance that that person might genuinely be feeling fear. They might actually be scared for their safety on campus. So I really just try to make sure that when I'm there, I'm kind of also spreading the messaging of just be cautious, just make sure that you're being tender in the way that you say things.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get us back on track now, I wanted you to share, and I had Carrie, our SANE nurse, do the same thing with me last week, because I think that this is really important, and I want to give you all a little bit of this platform as well to talk about how you take care of yourself emotionally after you work with survivors all day. If you have self-care advice for other advocates who might hear this interview, please feel free to share it, but just essentially talk about what you do to keep yourself in the game.
Yeah, just learning boundaries and try not to take home work with you. And trust me, I know that's not always easy to make that separation. I have been guilty many, many times where a case is just so upsetting that I dwell on it even after I leave work. But doing that can be very harmful to not only you, but to the survivors you serve, because it can quickly lead to burnout. There's a reason why there's such a high turnover rate in this field. So prioritizing self-care is necessary. For me, after working all day, I try to make time to just be present, you know, where I'm not thinking of responsibilities or tasks that need to be done. And one way I do this is binge watching my favorite TV shows or getting outdoors, taking a nap. You know, some people don't consider nap as self-care, but it is, you know, self-care looks different for everyone. So my advice would be just whatever works for you, whether it's hiking, music, journaling, just do that and make time for that, because you do deserve to have time for yourself to just reflect and cool down.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody who works even remotely close to this field really needs to hear those words and to take them to heart, because we do have really high turnover. And when we get burnt out in this field, the only person that it's hurting are the victims, the survivors that we're supposed to be serving, because they're losing us being at our best if we're not taking care of ourselves to keep us at that level.
Yes, absolutely. And it does take a while to learn. I've been in this field for almost 2 years, and I just recently started to learn the importance of boundaries. So it does take time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you're open about that. I know that in today's climate, it's kind of really easy to just, everybody thinks that they've got a handle on self-care, or at least they feel like they should have a handle on self-care. But I think it's also good to be open about the fact that we're not always great at it either. I know that there are some days when I could do a lot better myself. So be kind to yourself too, not only those around you.
Yes.
All right. So now, in your own words, can you describe for us the impact that sexual violence has on the community as a whole? We've talked about the impact on survivors. We've talked about the impact on the advocates and those who serve survivors. But what about those who may think that they're not directly impacted, the community overall?
Yeah. So sexual violence, you know, it is a public health issue that impacts not only the survivor, but all members of the community. It creates an environment of violence and fear, and it can affect, going back to what we talked about earlier, you know, it can affect workplaces and school and our community's well-being overall. So it's important to know that, you know, like how we mentioned earlier, even if you've never experienced sexual violence, chances are someone around you has. So it just has a huge impact over the community as a whole. Absolutely.
All right. And the Epic Echo listeners know what's coming next, because the last question of the interviews is always, always, always the same. And it's a tough one for you. But tell us, please, if you would, in your own words, what can we as a community or as individuals do to support survivors of sexual violence in our day-to-day lives? Just what can we do?
Yeah, so the best way, in my opinion, to support a victim of sexual violence is to first get educated on the issue, know about the issue, know about the stigmas around the issue, how your community has resources, you know, research your community's resources and share that information. Be a part of the change to spread more awareness, because I believe that, you know, we can't successfully prevent without having that awareness piece first. So there is sexual violence, and going back to the last question, in every community, and the survivor can be someone you know, could be someone you love, someone you work with or go to school with. So how you talk about that topic matters. Creating safe places matters. So we as a community just need to strive to be more supportive and less judgmental. And I know it can be very difficult to know what to say or do when supporting survivors of sexual violence, but oftentimes the best thing you can do is just actively listen and believe them. Try really hard not to place any shame and blame on them, because it does impact them.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is definitely one of those months where I feel like I can shamelessly plug our social media. One of the best ways that I could recommend that our listeners do get engaged is just to follow us on social media. This month, especially, we share 30 days or 31 days of Sexual Assault Awareness Month knowledge. I mean, we just truly go from each aspect to the next with resources linked to every post. And then as usual, I hope everybody knows by now that you can always reach out to Epic for support. One of our advocates, just like Sierra, is always available to be able to just be with you, listen to you, and essentially advocate for you, make sure that your voice is heard. So thank you so much, Sierra, for all of the work that you do, and especially for sitting down with me today for this interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Epic Echo. Make sure to like, rate, and follow The Epic Echo wherever you're listening right now. To suggest topic ideas or future guests, please visit our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo.